Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's president intensifies the fight against corruption.
We must once again accept that state corruption is so entrenched that it demands the designing and deployment of a new approach.
Families call for the release of kidnapped relatives in Nigeria after fresh threats from kidnappers. A rights group expresses concern about the closure of state-run public schools in Abuja. Russia's foreign minister travels to the Republic of Congo to seek allies and deflect Western criticism. A call to release two detained members of parliament in Eswatini. President Biden is to hold a U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit later this year.
I think the U.S. is trying to assert more leadership and, advance some common interest with Africa.
And Zimbabwe's government meets with the business sector to help stabilize the economy. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi's president, Lazarus Chakwera, is calling for a new approach to fighting corruption, which he says is widespread in the country. Speaking during the launch of a two-day national conference against graft in Blantyre, Chakwera says he's worried about the increase in levels of fraud and mismanagement, which has included several government officials. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
President Chakwera says the country needs to strengthen its anti-corruption laws to ensure that all bodies fighting it operate without local and international influence. He is asking the Malawi Parliament to look again into anti-graft laws and effect comprehensive changes where they are needed.
We have designated the 20 weeks between now and the National Anti-Corruption Day in December as a time to campaign against corruption across Malawi, a time to reset the moral tone of our nation through a special and intensified anti-corruption campaign across the country.
Chakwera says during this time, all stakeholders should make known their commitments toward dealing with corruption. He said the conference shows his renewed effort to fulfill his campaign promise to fight against fraud and mismanagement.
Just as it was between 2019 and 2020 when we realized that electoral fraud was so entrenched that it would require relentless and concerted effort from everyone to defeat it, we must once again accept that state corruption is so entrenched that it demands the designing and deployment of a new approach, one that involves a relentless and concerted effort from all stakeholders to fight and campaign against all forms of state corruption.
Last month, President Chakwera fired Inspector General of Police George Gainja, suspended the Chief of Staff at the State House, Prince Kapondangaga, and stripped some official duties from his Vice President, Saulos Chilima. The three were among several government officials accused of accepting kickbacks in return for government contracts. In his remarks at the conference, Minister of Justice Titus Imvalo said initiatives are in place to curb the practice.
Among them, my ministry is working with other key stakeholders towards the creation of a financial crimes court. The bill that's going to put the court into creation is the Cost Amendment Bill 2022. And that bill, Your Excellency, I can confirm, will be presented to Parliament at this sitting of Parliament.
However, anti-corruption authorities and legal experts argue that Malawi already has legislation against graft and the problem is enforcement. Malawi ranked 110 out of 180 countries in the report on perception of corruption released by Transparency International. Ezirion Kasoka is the corruption prevention officer at the Malawi's Anti-Corruption Bureau. He blames the increased number of cases on the lack of mechanisms to enhance delivery of public services.
We hear, for instance, at the National Registration Bureau, there are delays in processing of IDs. We hear of suspected cases of corruption with the police officers. We hear delays at the Road Traffic Directorate. We hear missing of taxes at MRIA and many other public institutions we can do better.
At the conference, whose the theme is resetting the country's moral tone, is expected to end Tuesday with recommendations from stakeholders on how Malawi can best fight the vice. I am Lamek Masina for VOA News in Blantyre, Malawi.
The families of Nigerian train passengers kidnapped in March this year are calling for the release of their relatives. This after abductors threatened to kill some of the remaining 42 hostages and also kidnapped officials, including the president, if their demands are not met. In a video released Sunday, one militant claimed to be a Boko Haram terrorist who escaped from an Abuja prison this month, along with hundreds of others. In this report from the Nigerian capital, Timothy Obiezu speaks to security analysts on the links between bandits and terrorists.
A demonstration was held at the Ministry of Transportation in Abuja on Monday morning by the relatives of victims still in captivity. The protest was triggered by footage released Sunday by the kidnappers, who were shown mercilessly flogging the captives. The kidnappers also threatened to kill some of the victims and sell the rest if the government did not respond to their demands. They also threatened to abduct Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and Kaduna State Governor Nasir El-Rufai. It's not clear what the terrorists' demands are, but the video triggered criticism of the government's inability to rescue the victims. On Sunday, the president's spokesperson, Garba Shehu, called the terrorist threats, quote, propaganda, end quote, and said security and defense forces, quote, have their plans and ways of doing things, end quote. Shehu was not immediately available for further comment, but security analyst Senator Iribu said the terrorists cannot possibly kidnap the president, but he warned that the threats must be taken seriously.
They are trying to show that they are more emboldened, and there's nothing the commander-in-chief can do.
They could smell weakness, that this government is weak. The fear is that the citizens are more vulnerable.
9 people were killed and scores kidnapped on the Abuja-Kaduna train the night of March 28 after armed men bombed the tracks and derailed the moving train. Experts blamed the attack on an unprecedented alliance between jihadists and criminal gangs. In the recent video, one of the terrorists claimed to have been freed from the Kuje prison in Abuja after a jailbreak on July 5th. The claim corroborates claims that bandits and terror groups were working hand in hand, says Irebu.
Terrorists can use banditry as a means to obtain money to advance their cause. Bandits can also use terrorism to obtain whatever they are looking for. So there's a mix already.
Protesting relatives say they will not relent until authorities free their loved ones from their captors. Temitope Kabiru's husband is among those held.
We are tired of waiting. We don't want a situation where these people will carry out their threats. We need the government to do something, and they should do it now.
Experts and families say Nigerian authorities have shown weak political will to secure the release of the victims, but authorities say they are trying to tactically handle the issue without losing innocent civilians to a gun battle with the terrorists. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The political pressure group called Concerned Nigerian for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law says the closure of state-run public secondary schools in the capital, Abuja, demonstrates that the heads of security agencies are not doing enough to protect the population. The group is now calling on President Muhammadu Buhari to fire or force out the top security chiefs for failing to do their jobs. The head of the group, Deji Adeyanju, tells VOA's Peter Clotty that Nigerians across the country are now living in fear due to insecurity and threats posed by Islamic militant groups and bandits.
Yeah, our reaction is very simple, that the president has abandoned governance, he has abandoned his responsibility and duty, and he has abandoned the oath of office to which he swore May 29, 2015 at Igbo Square. It's unfortunate that this is what we have degenerated into as a people and as a country, but this is the painful reality today.
But some people are suggesting that the federal government took the responsible decision to protect life and property, as well as protect these young people, by making that decision to close down these schools due to security concerns.
How can anyone even praise the government for failing to secure the country? Who are these people praising the government? How can anybody be praising the government that if the federal capital territory is no longer safe, where else would be safe in this country? So how can anybody even think of praising the government? How can anyone? You know, those who are praising the government are enemies of Nigeria. We should, in an ideal situation, we should be calling for the sack of the president or his resignation.
Well, some people are also saying he should fire all the security chiefs if they cannot secure or ensure the protection of all Nigerians, especially in the capital, Abuja, leading to this decision. Your reaction?
Yes, if terrorists can invade the Kuje prison, we're just beside the 189 battalion of the Nigerian army, and they came unchallenged, they operated 3 hours unchallenged, they left. The government has given up. There is no way that anybody can convince me that this president has the capacity to govern or has the capacity to do the right thing. There's no way.
How are Nigerians reacting to this news made by the Ministry of Education to close down, basically, the schools in the capital, asking parents to come for their children from the schools?
Nigerians are reacting in fear. You can see what many Nigerians are reacting on Facebook, on social media, everywhere. People are afraid. It's like the government has finally given up on protecting and securing the country. So Nigerians are afraid.
That was Deji Adeyanju, the head of the political advocacy group Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law. You are speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. Listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 26. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is on a first-ever visit to the Republic of Congo. It's part of a four-nation tour of Africa to seek support against Western pressure over its invasion of Ukraine and soaring food prices that threaten famine in parts of East Africa. Bright Kehu reports from Pointe Noire in the Republic of Congo.
The Russian foreign minister met Monday with the Republic of Congo's President Denis Sassou Nguesso at his residence in Oyo, a town located 400 kilometers north of the capital, Brazzaville. The visit was the first ever by Russia's top diplomat to Congo and Lavrov's second stop in Africa after Egypt on a four-nation tour that includes Uganda and Ethiopia, where the African Union has its headquarters. Lavrov's visit appeared to be aimed in part at seeking allies, as Moscow is under intense Western pressure for its invasion of Ukraine. Western nations blame Russia's war and its Black Sea blockade of Ukraine grain for soaring global prices for food that are falling risks of famine in the Horn of Africa. Russia blames Western sanctions for the precarious food situation. Like most of Africa, the oil-rich Republic of Congo has remained neutral in the conflict. Ahead of his trip, Lavrov praised African nations for their independence and lashed out at Western nations that profited from Africa's past colonial rule. Lavrov's visit to the former French colony comes as French President Emmanuel Macron arrived in the region for a visit to Cameroon, Benin, and Guinea-Bissau. France has pulled back support from some former colonies as they have become less democratic, such as Mali, which is under military rule and accused by Paris of hiring Russian mercenaries. Both Moscow and Bamako deny deploying Russian mercenaries in Mali. President Denis Sassou Nguesso has been in power in the Republic of Congo for most of the past 36 years. In his Africa trip, Lavrov is also promoting the second Russia-Africa summit, which he's announced in Egypt Sunday will be held in mid-2023. The U.S. plans to hold a summit with African leaders in December. Brice Kehu for VOA News, Pointe Noire, Republic of Congo.
The White House will hold a U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit December 13th through the 15th. Joseph Sego is the Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He tells viewers Carrie Van Dam that the Biden administration is launching the summit to engage more with African countries and elevate the importance of democracy.
I think the U.S. is trying to assert more or leadership and, advance some common interest with Africa.
Do you think that the Biden administration is trying to counter China's influence in Africa by holding this summit?
I don't think that's the primary motivation, and it's often overlooked that the U.S. has far longer ties in Africa than is commonly recognized. The United States has cooperation efforts, dating back at least 8 decades in Africa across a whole host of fronts, economic, developmental, humanitarian, trade, cultural, security. And so there's a lot of common interest there between the United States and Africa. And I think the primary motivation is really to put a positive trajectory on what this means and to reaffirm those shared interests. And I think there's going to be a very strong focus on economic opportunities and how to expand U.S. foreign direct investment and trade and economic cooperation on the continent.
I'm thinking back on the 2014 first Africa Leaders Summit that was held by President Obama then. Do you expect heads of state to attend this summit as they did back then?
Absolutely. I think there's a strong interest on the part of many African leaders in engaging with the United States. Indeed, I would go so far as to say, the United States is the preferred partner for many African countries. The question has been, how engaged is the United States going to be in Africa? And so I think there will be a high level of receptivity. African governments would welcome more U.S. investment, more trade, and more job creation that would be generated from more fulsome U.S. engagement on the continent.
Several African countries, as you know, are mired in conflict. Ethiopia, Burkina Faso, Mali, South Sudan, Sudan, just to name a few. Will the Biden White House be able to focus on what then-President Obama called the ingredients of progress when he hosted that first summit, strengthening governments on which economic development and free societies depend, he said, the rule of law, accountable and transparent institutions? Is that even attainable in some of these countries?
Well, I think it certainly is attainable. And you're right, there are 16 African countries, actually, that are in conflict in one form or another right now. And so there has been deterioration. Moreover, this summit will be happening in a period where we've seen a considerable democratic backsliding on the continent. There are now more authoritarian-leaning countries than democratic-leaning countries in Africa. That wasn't the case just a few years ago.
That was Joseph Sego, the Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. He was speaking with viewers Carol Van Dam. CIVICAS, the global alliance dedicated to strengthening citizen action and civil society around the world, is calling for the immediate release of 2 Eswatini members of parliament and all charges against them dropped. Umduduzi Basidi Mambuza and Mtandani Dube were detained on July 25, 2021, following protests demanding political reforms. They were charged under Eswatini's Suppression of Terrorism Act and for contravening COVID-19 regulations. David Cordett is the advocacy and campaign manager for CIVICAS. He tells me that the detention of the 2 members of parliament is politically motivated.
Our call is for the 2 pro-democracy members of parliament who have been in jail for 1 year today, Nduduzi Mabuza and Ntandeni Dube, to be released immediately and all charges against them dropped.
As you know, the Eswatini government has charged them with terrorism, especially as it relates to the ongoing pro-democracy protests in the country. Their case is in court.
Yes, and that's why we are calling for them to be released, because the charges are not substantiated with any facts. And like many other pro-democracy activists and human rights defenders who have been charged in the past and in the course of the protests, that started in May of last year, the charges are in relation to their pro-democracy activities in the context of what's happening in Swaziland. And that's why, as human rights organizations, we're denouncing the charges. They have been in jail for 1 year now. This is against regional and international human rights norms and standards. And so we are calling for them to be released, and we're calling on the Eswatini authorities, particularly the king, to yield to these demands and requests from civil society, from unions, and from opposition activists for the opening of democratic space.
You mentioned regional and international organizations. Whatever happened to SADC mediation relating to the situation in Eswatini?
SADC has been quite involved since last year, when close to 100 people were killed as they called for political reforms. And so there's been several interventions by SADC. The president of South Africa, who chairs the SADC security trioka, has sent special emissaries to Eswatini. And on the 21st of July, there was supposed to be a face-to-face meeting of several SADC leaders, including South Africa, under the auspices of SADC and King Swati. And King Swati decided at the very last minute that he wanted a virtual meeting. But the position of SADC was this was a very important issue that needed to be addressed face to face. And so the meeting was postponed.
I heard you making an appeal to the king, but the government might argue that the case is already in court. Why do you want the king to be involved?
Because everybody knows that the king controls different arms of government. And everybody knows that these are trumped up charges. There's no basis. The only reason they've been charged with terrorism is because they dared to call for democratic reforms.
David, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much for your time.
David Cudder is the advocacy and campaign manager for Civicus. He was speaking with me from Johannesburg. In Zimbabwe, most businesses have been charging their goods and services exclusively in U.S. dollars as the local Zimbabwean dollar continues to lose value. This has prompted the government to invite the business community to a dialogue to find lasting solutions. From Harare, reporter Kuza Navashe looks at how consumers have had to adjust to rising inflation.
Economist Victor Boroma says talks between the business community and government are long overdue.
There is definitely a need for engagement between government and the business sector. I'm sure you know that it forms part of the social contract. That dialogue should not be on blame shifting. It should be more or less trying to identify where there are loopholes in government policy and in informing policies that would benefit the private sector. What should be done in order to reduce inflation? What should be done so that businesses can be able to break even?
Denford Mutashu is the president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Retailers. He was part of the dialogue on Tuesday.
The engagement between government and a business represented by manufacturers, suppliers, retailers, wholesalers, and many other representatives was a reflection of the obtaining situation as far as pricing, inflation, parallel market exchange rate, and the general instability that has been seen prevailing in the economy. There was an agreement that both government and business seek stability, and there is a need to stabilize the exchange rate, stabilize inflation, stabilize general pricing in the economy, and the pricing of goods and services exclusively in U.S. dollars.
He adds that government and the business community made headway in finding solutions. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunamashe from Harare.
And that's it for this Tuesday, July 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa